Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Laura Owens.
And I'm Jan Black.
Wouldn't it be great to discover a few simple steps you could take to improve your life? Of course it would. And that's just what we'll do on this episode.
We are thrilled to welcome our guest, BJ Fogg, who's researched human behavior for over 20 years at Stanford University and is the director of the Behavior Design Lab at Stanford. He's also the author of a great new book called Tiny Habits, The Small Changes That Change Everything. BJ, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me, Jan and Laura. I'm really happy to be with you.
Well, we absolutely love the book, Tiny Habits, because I think we can all relate to small changes. Tell us a little bit about why it is that small changes change everything.
Wow, I have about five different answers for that, but I'll just start in with the simplest one.
Okay.
The simplest one is small changes we can make into reality. Like making a tiny change through the tiny habits method, you can actually succeed at, as opposed to trying something big and failing and feeling bad. And the reason, and we'll probably unpack this a little bit more later, the reason that tiny works is you don't have to rely very much on motivation. And our motivation goes up and down as human beings. And so if you think you're going to have lots of motivation to do something hard, you're kind of fooling yourself. And the tiny habits method faces that reality of being a human being. It's like our motivation will go up and down. So tiny changes can work, whereas the big ones are really precarious.
Mm-hmm. I love this whole idea, and I was immediately intrigued by it. But I have to say, I was thinking about somebody who's maybe making a weight loss goal of, say, their resolution is they want to lose 100 pounds in a year. And it seems like making just one tiny change just wouldn't get them there. What would you say to that?
Well, that's right. But you can make a bunch of tiny changes that add up to sustainable long-term change. And that's really the best way to think about it. It's not any one thing that's going to get any one huge habit that gets somebody to that long-term change and keeps them there. The key is to find the right kinds of new habits that are very small and sustainable that you don't have to, you know, worry about it falling away after a while. I think we've all known people who have just used willpower and just, you know, muscled it out and they've lost weight, but then they tap out of willpower and they go back, and nobody likes that. And that's with tiny habits and with this approach. You don't. You find the little tiny things that you want to do and you make them even easier, and then you wire them into your life, and then they're permanent changes. And you can combine a lot of those together and have these huge outcomes.
So what would you suggest to the person who wants to lose 100 pounds over a year? What are the tiny changes that they might make?
Yeah. Well, I would say first and foremost, I would look at snacking behavior. I'm just going to dive right into very, very specific.
Okay.
I mean, because I think for a lot of people, that's the Achilles heel. So find snacks that you like that are also on your eating game plan. Now, I can't say what it is for each person, but certainly vegetables and you know, basic foods are usually a good idea. So go out and explore and find foods you like that are on your game plan and make those habits. Start there. And then start creating other habits related to nutrition. I mean, really weight loss is strongly a function of what you eat. And exercise helps, but it's really about eating. And so find ways to change what you eat. And I would start with snacking. Just do an exploration. And maybe you think, like, you like celery, but you try it and you don't. Fine. Don't make yourself eat celery. Find what you love that's also healthy, that's on your game plan, and double down and triple down on that and just keep going.
You say that a tiny habit is made up of three separate parts, the anchor, the action, and the victory dance. And I was wondering if you could explain those a little bit more. And I was also wondering if one is more important than the rest.
Oh, so good. The second question is fast answer. No, they're all important.
Okay.
And what the Tiny Habits Method does is it brings those three, basically you're hacking all three things with the Tiny Habits Method. And so let's first start with what the new habit is. So let's say you want to drink more water, like you want to hydrate more.
Mm-hmm, okay.
Well, in this case, the habit isn't even drinking, it might not even be drinking a glass of water. It might just be filling the glass up and putting it on your work desk. So that's the habit. Notice how tiny and easy that is. So you take whatever habit you want. So focus on what you want, not what you should. Make it so, so easy. And then find out where it fits in your day. So what does it come after? In my own life, I have that habit, and I've done that for many years. In my own life, that comes right after I put my breakfast plate by the sink and I thank my partner. I say, thanks for breakfast, Denny. Then I go fill up water and I put it on my work desk at home. So that's the habit. After I put my plate on the kitchen counter, say, thanks, Denny, I fill up my glass and I put it on my work desk. So there's the habit sequence to wire it in. That's the third piece. It's called celebration. The way that you wire a habit into your brain is by firing off a positive emotion. So as I put the glass down, if I'm forming the habit, I want to wire it in. So I find a way to help myself feel positive. For some people, it's a fist bump and you go, awesome. Other people will do a little dance. Sometimes you'll do sound effects. Like as we put the glass down, they might go, doo, 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 and celebrate it. So what you want to do is have a positive emotion. That's what tells your brain to wire it in. Your brain goes, whoa, that made me feel good. I'm going to do that again. I'm going to do that more often. So you're hacking one, the habit, by making it tiny. You're hacking what reminds you to do it, for finding what comes after. In this case, it comes after I put the plate down. Then that's my reminder to fill the glass. And then you're hacking how the habit forms by causing a positive emotion inside yourself. So the three hacks that come together and work taken together, you can create habits really quickly and easily.
Is it important to write down the tiny habits that you want to create?
I think so. I've studied so many things related to tiny habits. I've not run a study of writing it down versus not writing it down. It would be a great one to run, and I could run it really easily. But let me share a technique that actually my sister created. My sister helps teach tiny habits. She helps train and certify the coaches in the tiny habits method. But her method, and I've adopted this, is you take like a whiteboard marker and you write the tiny habit recipe on your bathroom mirror. So it'd be, after I put my plate by the sink, I will fill my glass of water. Or after I brush, I will floss my teeth. Or after I sit down on the train, I will open my book and read a paragraph. And by writing it on your bathroom mirror, you see it in the morning. And also what's nice about the whiteboard marker is it's easy to erase and revise it. And that's a huge part of the method. You come up with, here's what I'm going to do, here's what I'm doing it after. But you won't always get it right, and that's okay. You know, part of the method is revise it till you figure it out. Like, let's say you want to read more, and you think, okay, I'm going to just read just a paragraph. I don't have to read a whole chapter. Like, make it really tiny. And then where does it come? Well, after I sit down on the train, and you try it, it doesn't work very well. Then you go back and say, okay, it didn't work there, fine. So erase it off in the mirror and say, what else can it come after? Oh, good. After I sit down on my lunch break out by this picnic table, that's when I'm going to start the new habit. So part of this method is you design it, and if it doesn't work, you revise it. So that wording that I said, like after I brush, I will floss one tooth, that phrasing we call a recipe. And one reason I chose the word recipe for it is that you can revise it. You know, so writing it down, writing it on the mirror, I think is the best way, actually. I have like these index cards, and people can get these online now at tinyhabits.com that have the recipe format written out. And I keep them in, it's actually literally a recipe box. So for each habit that I've worked on, I have a different card for, and I have it there in the recipe box. Not everybody does that, but it's a nice way to go.
I've always heard that it takes 21 days to create a new habit, and I know that you don't think that's the case. So I'm wondering how long you say it takes for new habits to become automatic.
Well, it can happen very quickly. In my research on tiny habits, which dates back to 2011, more than 40,000 people have done the method. The vast majority of people report that a habit within 5 days has become either automatic or very automatic within 5 days.
Wow.
But that's what when you do it in the right way, when you have that emotion attached, that positive emotion attached to the habit, it can wear in quickly. Let me talk a little bit about the 21-day thing.
Mm-hmm.
People often ask that question. I often get it. And the reason I think people ask the question is because they're under the assumption that repetition creates habits, which is not the case, but that's what they've been led to believe. Like, okay, how many days do I have to, like, force myself to go to the gym and then magically it will be a habit? Is it 21? Is it 66? How much do I have to suffer? They tell me how much. And then, you know, like magically at 21 days, it's going to have it. Well,
yeah.
So I think there's an underlying assumption there. And what I've done, and I've not published this because it's kind of awkward for me to publish it because so many people have gotten it wrong and I don't want them to see that I'm attacking them, but I do need to set the record straight. When you go back and look at the research that people cite on like 66 days to create a habit, that's kind of the buzz right now. You go back and look at the original research and read it carefully. It's not research that shows causal effect, like this causes that. It's a correlation. So it correlates, it doesn't cause. And so people have got, and that's a classic mistake, you know, mistaking correlation for causation. So we have a project ahead of us to help people understand that it's not repetition that creates habits, it's emotion. And if you're good at firing off that positive emotion as you do the habit, you can wire it in very quickly. And even new people who do tiny habits, you know, the data shows that the majority of them wire in a habit within 5 days. And, you know, in the range, it's either automatic or very automatic. That's what they're reporting.
You've identified three core motivators, and they each have two sides. Can you explain those?
Yeah. So one of the things that I love to do is take really hard problems, abstract problems, and then break them down into something we can understand and talk about. And so motivation is a big abstract area. And so I broke it down years ago into three areas. You have pleasure and pain. So that's two sides of the coin. It's what you're experiencing in this moment. So if you're experiencing pain in this moment, you're going to be motivated. If you're experiencing pleasure in this moment, you're going to be motivated. So it's the sensation in the moment. The next category is hope and fear. So that's an anticipation of something happening in the future. Hope is the anticipation of something good happening, where fear is the anticipation of something bad or a loss happening. So that's different than pleasure and pain. And hope and fear are very powerful motivators for us. And then the third category is a social category, and it has to do with the sense of I'm going to be accepted and I'm going to belong and I'm going to look cool. And then the flip side of that is I'm going to look bad and I'm going to be rejected and I'm going to be ostracized. We're very deeply wired as human beings to be social creatures. So you have those three different motivators, and I call them core motivators, each with two sides.
What role do they play then in terms of our habits?
Oh, so much. Let me give a very specific answer and we can go further if you want. When it comes to creating new habits, which with the tiny habits is faster and easier and actually more fun than people think, one of the key things is to pick a habit that you want. Don't pick a habit that you feel like you should have. Pick something that you already want to do, something you already have motivation to do. That's the winning path. What doesn't work very well is to pick a habit that you feel like you should have. So that might be one that causes you some pain or something that makes you feel bad or makes you like unpleasant, you don't like the food. No, don't do that. That's why I said earlier, pick snacks that you love, that you like, that give you pleasure, and they're out there. You might have to explore and experiment to find those and then wire those in these habits. So in other words, you're aligning your new habits with things you're already motivated to do. And that works really well. The opposite is fraught with problems.
What would you say to somebody who is maybe, let's say, in mid-January, and they're feeling like, well, you know, I've tried this for a couple weeks, and it doesn't really seem to be sticking, and they're getting discouraged?
I would say you're normal. and I would say the reality is the way that our culture sets us up to do New Year's resolutions, it sets us up to fail. So do not blame yourself. It's not that you lack willpower or motivation. It's just that the way that we've been told for decades of how we change doesn't work very well. And there's a much better way to do it. And so I would say, you're normal. It's not your fault. Don't be discouraged. And there's a really easy way to do it that doesn't take a whole bunch of motivation or willpower. And you focus on what you want, number one, and you make habits around things that you like and things you want. And the next step is you change by feeling good, not by feeling bad. And that's why the celebration thing, the feeling of success that you can cause inside yourself wires in the habit, but it also has a bigger ripple effect on your life. You learn to embrace those good feelings rather than resist them. It's so odd how many people, not just in the U.S., especially like in the U.K., right? People from the U.K. learn tiny habits. They're so resistant to saying good for me, or I did a good job, or even good feelings sometimes. And in some ways, that's what Tiny Habits, my book, and that program, and my hope is all about, that we can, as a culture, embrace feeling good and not, you know, let me tell you a quick story that really, really, as a researcher, just sent me back. It was just, I was stunned. I was about 4 months into teaching Tiny Habits after a year or so of doing it on my own and creating all these habits, and I couldn't believe how easy it was. In 2011, I started teaching it to other people, and I couldn't believe how many people signed up. So I was teaching 200 to 300 people a week personally through email, and it was taking a ton of my time, but it was helping people, and it made me happy, and it made them happy, and so I kept going. About 4 months in, I got an email back from a woman who said, and this was on Wednesday, so day 3 of a 5-day program. She wrote me back an email, said, "BJ, I now see I've endured a lifetime of self-trash talk." And I read that, and it sent me back. Because Jan and Laura, the people I was surrounded with at the time at Stanford and so on, they're not people that I thought, you know, were bad-mouthing themselves all the time.
Yeah.
And so what that email did was it helped me then, as I worked with the hundreds and then eventually thousands of people, well over 40,000, to recognize how pervasive this is. Mm-hmm. And people, I don't want to stereotype, but when I've shared this with women, they look at me and go, "Wow, BJ, you're so dense. That's our life. How did you not know this?" And it's like, I didn't know that. I mean, how am I going to know that? But what she did for me in that moment with that email was made me understand that this little quirky thing I call tiny habits needed to be more than a research project, but I needed to bring this out in a bigger way, because this is where everyday people are at. They badmouth themselves. It's self-trash talk, and I really want to help change that.
Tell us about the Maui habit, which is sort of goes along your lines about trying to change, you know, an attitude.
Yes. Well, you know, in the tiny habits, there's only one habit I prescribe. Okay, it's not like I give you, here are the 10 habits to do this or the 20 habits to do that. I give you a method to create any habit you want, any habit. But there is one that I call the Maui habit that I suggest for everybody. And it goes like this. After I put my feet on the floor in the morning, like when you're waking up, after I put my feet on the floor in the morning, I will say, "It's going to be a great day." You say those 7 words. And there's a history behind it, and I've given a TED Talk on it, so I won't go into that. But as it turns out, the thousands of people who have adopted that, who start the morning by saying this positive statement, it has a really big impact on them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we all have those mornings. I have those mornings where I was like, okay, I'm going to face a terribly hard day, and I might totally fail. I still say it, Jan and Laura, I still say it, but I might say it like, it's going to be a great day somehow. Like, I'm realistic. But it helps, because then at least you're cracking the door open to the possibility of having a great day.
Mm-hmm. How important is it that we get support from other people? And I'm thinking about this. Say somebody is talking about wanting to drink less as a resolution.
Yeah.
And they have friends who want to go out all the time, and they like these people, but they don't want to go out and drink with them. Is it important that we have friends that support us, or can we kind of just try and make this change on our own and hope our friends go along with it?
Oh, let me give you two answers. It is important, but let me give you two answers to that. One is, one thing about tiny habits that people have told me, I didn't have to do this myself, but, you know, I've shared it with so many people over the years, is because they're making such tiny, subtle changes that their friends don't sabotage them, okay? Because sometimes, and this is really sad, but it happens, sometimes when people try to change, their friends or their spouses or somebody in their life actually sabotages them and sets them back. Mm-hmm. But with tiny, you can kind of sneak it in. So you can start changing without making a big announcement, without announcing it on Facebook, without making a big scene in your home. You can do it tiny. So tiny is safe in that way. So that's answer one. Answer two is, for certain kinds of change, it's so important to change together. And in Tiny Habits, I have a chapter on exactly this, change together. There was a year, about 5 years ago, in my Stanford lab where that was the theme of our research the entire year. I felt it was so important to help people understand how to change together. That's what we focused on. The thing that doesn't work, as you know, is let's say a busy mom's trying to eat differently. She's trying to change how she eats, but her husband doesn't want to change and her kids aren't on board with it. Let's say they're teenage kids. That makes it a little easier to talk about. And so they want, you know, one kind of dinner and she's eating a whole different thing where they're not aligning how they're eating. That's really hard to sustain. So in certain domains, and I've listed these elsewhere, changing as a household, changing together is really important. So that would be how you eat, how you consume media, how you manage your stress, and how you sleep, and a few others. But in those domains, if you're trying to change, it's really important to get your household on board if you can. I know you can't always do that, but if you can, like imagine this busy mom deciding she's eating differently and her husband and her teenage kids go along with it. She's going to be way more successful along the way.
BJ, our show is called Nobody Told Me, and we always ask our guests, what is your Nobody Told Me lesson? So what is it that nobody told you about habits that you learned, you know, through this process that of research that you really would like to pass on to others?
Oh, my gosh. So many things. I'll share this. Nobody told me that you should think of your of habits like a garden. So say you have an acre garden, and you have flowers and you have plants and you have trees, and they're varied and they're different, and each one's a different habit. Now you can neglect the garden and let weeds grow, or you can design for what you want in the garden. And so nobody told me that habits are very much like plants, and the collection is like a garden. And that also means there'll be certain habits that no longer serve their purpose or run their lifespan, and that's okay. Just like a flower has served, or you're tired of this certain plant, that's fine. Remove it and put something else in its place. So habits are these things that you can design for and create and find the right place in your life and evolve it over time as your needs and wants change. So it's this evolving, growing, dynamic thing.
And BJ, how can people connect with you and learn more about the new book and Tiny Habits? You have a great website for it.
Yeah. So, yes, the book's out, and it's out you know, in the booksellers near you, including Costco. You can get it online. That's great resource. TinyHabits.com is a way to sign up for the free 5-day program and also learn more about the book and meet some of the coaches I've trained. And then BJFogg.com is my broader work that includes Stanford and other things.
All right. Well, BJ, thank you so much for joining us. This has been an absolute pleasure, and we've learned so much.
Thanks so much, Dan. Thanks, Laura.
Our thanks to BJ Fogg, author of the new book, Tiny Habits, The Small Changes That Change Everything. And again, you can find more information at bjfogg.com and at tinyhabits.com. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
You're listening to Nobody Told Me. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's time to get down to business with $30 a month business internet. WOW Business offers 99.9% network reliability so that you can keep your business moving. $30 a month gets you 30 megabytes per second with 24/7 US-based support, a price lock guarantee, and a 60-day satisfaction guarantee. Lock in our lowest priced offer for the support you need. Go to switchtowellbusiness.com. Offer for new customers with a 2-year agreement subject to change. Prices do not include taxes, fees, and equipment charges. Restrictions apply.